365 days a year.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel and I'm your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 10, and on Saturdays at 4. We're brought to you by Montecito Bank and Trust, proudly serving our communities and their financial needs for over 40 years. Pierre LaFond, Wendy Foster, offering fine clothes, good food, and vintage wines. Habitat for Humanity, building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. And CSU Channel Islands, no matter which of their academic programs you choose, you will be at the center of your educational experience. And speaking of the center of your educational experience, we have two people here today from UCSB, which is certainly a fine school, too. We have Alyssa Mrazak. Very good, huh? Did I get that right?
You nailed it.
And let me try the other person's name, Michael Mrazak.
Nice job.
Wow. It's luckily I can practice on two names. Well, thank you for being here, Alyssa and Michael.
So, thanks for having us.
Alyssa, you're the a postdoctoral research fellow and at the UCSB Center for Mindfulness and Human Potential. And Michael, you're the director of research.
That's right.
And it's really unbelievable that by coincidence, you both have the same last name.
Yeah.
How did that work out?
Yeah, for better or for worse, I've known Michael every single day of my life because he's my big brother. And oftentimes when I tell people that we're siblings and we work together, they say, like, what? I could never work with my brother and my sister. We would fight all the time. But he's a pretty mindful dude, hard to fight with.
So this is like the Trump administration. It's all about family. Is that so? You chose her out of 100 applicants, and you based it on the fact that she was your sister? I don't want to start trouble.
Well, I mean, she was a great candidate. It actually took a lot of work to recruit her, but we're very lucky we did.
So, tell us about mindfulness. What is mindfulness?
Yeah, so we actually did a survey recently of adults throughout the United States, and we found something interesting, which is that most people have very positive associations with mindfulness, but they're not actually confident they know what it is. And I think part of the reason is that there's a lot of different definitions out there. I think the simplest way to understand it is just presence of mind, right? Is your mind actually present with the activity that you're engaged with?
So if I'm here talking to you and I'm thinking about what I have to do in 2 hours, I'm not being mindful.
Yeah, you're mind wandering, which is something that people do actually about half of their waking life.
Okay, so is mind wandering all there is, but is there other types of lack of mindlessness? What else is there besides just mind wandering? Wandering. What else is there that you could, like, intuitively, so we can understand?
I think in some cases, just the broader theme of multitasking might be an example. So mind wandering in a way is multitasking. You're engaged in one activity, but you're thinking about something else. You know, but if you're getting ready in the morning and you're trying to put on your clothes and you're also trying to make your smoothie and not really doing either of them effectively, then you're not really being present with either activity.
So this is something that I guess almost every person below 50 is probably suffering from in this society, given what takes place with the digital world. So is it possible to be mindful unless you take your course or read your book? How can someone actually function then as a mindful person in a world that's so disparate with different things getting their attention?
Yeah, arguably right now is one of the hardest times to actually be mindful when there are so many different distractions grabbing for your attention. And one of the primary things that we're working on right now is developing a digital course that can help teenagers with exactly that, because it's hard. There are lots of distractions, there are lots of temptations, and sometimes people feel like multitasking is the best use of their time because time is precious and you want to do a lot of things at once. And so there are a lot of things sort of working against mindfulness, you could say.
Where's the intersection of mindfulness and meditation? Is there, do they go together? I mean, is that a way to get mindfulness in your system by meditating?
Yeah, one of the ways that I like to describe it is that you can view meditation as a time where you set aside time to actually practice the skill of being present. And so mindfulness is something that's relevant in any moment of your life, right? It's relevant right now as you and I are having a conversation. But that ability to be present is something that you can actually cultivate through sort of a more formal meditation practice.
And by being mindful, you also are a better partner and friend because you're actually paying attention to somebody. I used to get mad when people yawned in my face. Now I don't even get a chance to because they're looking at their phone.
Mm-hmm.
What is the reason why I should be mindful? Am I happier if I'm mindful? Am I more effective if I'm mindful? What is the incentive to be a mindful person?
Well, if you look at the scientific literature, it's a little bit like exercise, where mindfulness appears to be good for just about everything, right? The research shows that it can improve your physical health. It can help you think more clearly. It can help you be less stressed, less anxious, less depressed. And as you say, it can improve the quality of your relationships. And when I was a young scientist, I was actually sort of skeptical of that and the idea that mindfulness could be good for so many different things in our life. But over time, that skepticism has worn off for me as I've read more of the science and I've practiced mindfulness more in my own life, because I think what it does is it trains a really fundamental skill about how we use attention in our life. And attention, I think, is an underappreciated skill that really has the capacity to change the way that we engage with our thoughts and our emotions and the choices we make. And I think that's why mindfulness has the potential to have so many different benefits in our lives.
The neurobiology that's coming out shows that 0 to 2 year olds, that's a really critical period for forming not only personality, but also learning. Is there any way to bring this to the level of the 0 and 2 year old to make them mindful?
Well, I actually have a 2.5 year old, so I've been thinking about this topic in my own life for the last couple of years. And with my daughter, we do practice what we call magic breathing, where we just set some time aside and try to make it fun, but take a moment to just relax and focus on your breath. But I think just as importantly, when you have a young child, it's about how the parent is being mindful with them and the parent choosing to put away the distraction, put away the phone, and to spend that quality time with their kid.
Yeah, some of the people that I've spoken to in the neuro area for young people think that, like the Einstein program that Disney put out, some of the worst things, because you put the kid in front of a screen and they're not interacting with a human being, which I guess would create a better chance of mindfulness when you're actually looking in the eye of a person than looking at a screen.
Yeah. My experience with my daughter is that if she watches more than 10 or 15 minutes of some kind of video a day, it changes her mood and the way she engages with us for a little while afterwards. So while little doses can be fun and engaging and kind of give us something to share and talk about, I think limiting screen time in my own experience has been something that's quite important.
Well, I also found that alleviating watching CNN has made me better as well,
yeah.
Because I can't watch TV anymore. And luckily for Netflix, because I can watch British crime shows and not look what's going on in the world today. It's very depressing.
Yeah, I think it's true that this isn't just a challenge for kids, right? This is something for everybody, that everybody's life is filled with distractions and temptations.
So UCSB cares about this because?
We currently have a grant from the U.S. Department of Education, and the goal is to actually try to design a digital mindfulness course that can help high school students around the country and eventually around the world benefit from mindfulness training. So I think it's both a research project and trying to advance the science of how to teach mindfulness effectively, and it's also an education project about learning how to really help students throughout the country.
And do you teach also?
I do. We teach less these days in the context of formal classes at UCSB, although I've done a lot of that in the past. These days, most of our teaching is about teaching online to high school students.
And where do you, when you teach at UCSB, though, what course do you teach?
Well, most recently, the course that I've been teaching is on mindfulness, a class on the science and practice of mindfulness.
In what department?
In the Department of Psychological and Brain Sciences.
Oh. Okay, yeah. Good. And this is something that is in other schools, too, or are you on the forefront here at UCSB?
There are definitely other schools that are interested. I'd say there's dozens of research teams around the world that are now trying to investigate the benefits of mindfulness. And offering a formal course on mindfulness is unique, but there's a few other schools that are doing it.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
In 1962, Pierre Lafond founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
The Central Coast may seem laid back, but when it's time to work, no one works harder, including the bank that's grown up here. Montecito Bank and Trust offers customized lending and banking for all businesses, big and small. It's harder than offering one-size-fits-all solutions, but it's the right thing to do. And here, getting things right is a way of life. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. CSU Channel Islands is affordable and financial aid is available with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, using innovative social-emotional learning and character building to help teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Alyssa Mrazak and Michael Mrazak from the UCSB Center for Mindfulness and Human Potential. So, it's not a coincidence you both have the same interest. So how did each one of you, how did you get interested in this kind of science and this subject? Well, you're older, so it must have started with you, Michael.
So both of our parents were sort of in the field of mental health, and they were scientists. And so I think that scientific thinking and sort of the mission of using science to improve lives was ingrained in us at a young age. I think my particular interest in mindfulness as a topic started through my own personal experience being introduced to mindfulness when I was in high school, which happened actually just as I was going through a really difficult time moving across the country from Washington, D.C. to Rochester, Minnesota the day before my junior year of high school, which was a really difficult transition for me, filled with all sorts of negative emotions that I was convinced were happening to me as a consequence of what was going on in my life. And coincidentally, at the same time, I was introduced to mindfulness and the idea that I could have some more control over my thoughts and my feelings by taking charge of my own attention. And that sort of paradigm shift was really useful for me during that like pivotal moment in my life. And so I think that has inspired me to eventually want to be able to then bring some of those same ideas that were so useful to me to teenagers today.
And you went to school in Rochester?
I did my second 2 years of high school in Rochester, Minnesota.
And you went to college?
I went to college at Rice University in Houston, Texas.
And you, the younger sister, followed in your brother's footsteps, or you were interested in this for other reasons?
Yeah, so like Mike said, both of our parents are involved in mental health. And so when I actually went off to college, I was determined to do something entirely different. And I, at that stage of my life, I was really excited about anthropology and architecture, and I wanted to design like culturally relevant resorts, and that's what I went to college for. But then I took my first psychology class, and I totally fell in love with it and kind of never looked back. And so I got introduced to mindfulness actually through Mike. He'd come home from, you know, college on breaks and whatnot, and he'd be in our house kind of sitting in the corner cross-legged meditating, and I'd be like, what is my brother doing? What is that? Looks so weird. And over the years, you know, he sort of shared with me how powerful it was for him. And so, yeah, he was the first introduction for me.
And so you do it too. I mean, you're not just studying and teaching, you're also practicing.
Yeah. Yeah. For the last several years, it's been a big part of my life.
Have this initiative called the Mindful Education Initiative, which was a result of a grant from the U.S. government. Congratulations, because you have a
Thank
grant.
You.
Let's hope it continues.
Fingers crossed.
The story in the New York Times today wasn't particularly encouraging about money being spent on colleges, but we won't go there. What exactly is the grant for?
So the grant is from the U.S. Department of Education. We got it in September of 2017, and it's a three-year grant, and it's called an innovation grant. And so basically our goal is over these years to develop and refine a digital mindfulness course that can help empower high school students to learn how to take charge of their focus and reduce their stress and stay resilient in the face of life's challenges.
Okay, so they're past the point of asking whether this is going to work. They want to know how to do it. So this is, in a way, good. That is, they've bought into the notion that this is going to help kids, and now they're looking for ways of introducing it in a way that would be successful. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think what you just described is actually a really good summary of the state of the scientific literature on mindfulness, where there are literally thousands of papers showing the potential benefits of mindfulness, and there's almost zero research investigating how to teach it most effectively. And so we're trying to fill that gap by trying to learn specifically how to teach it to teenagers.
And I guess one of the problems is that, you know, teens have always had a problem since whenever they started looking at teens. It's a tough time. And I can't imagine a worse time to be teens than today. So in a way, the line keeps getting moved further. As you do your research, it gets worse. And if you're in Southern California, you have not only the whole digital issue, how do you be mindful if you're afraid your parents are not going to be home when you return because they're going to be taken away by immigration? So you've got a sort of a moving target. You know, mindfulness is okay if you've got basically a good life and you can afford to be mindful. You know, what if all these stresses it must be much more daunting to develop systems that would actually be able to cut through all of the pressures these kids have?
I think that mindfulness is definitely relevant to everybody, and you don't have to have sort of a background of privilege to be able to benefit from it. Mm-hmm. And that it's really a fundamental skill that can empower any individual to take greater control over their mind and their life, regardless of what their circumstances are. But I do agree that actually connecting with teenagers and empowering them with this skill is not an easy thing to do. And so I think that's why it's so important that we have this time to really devote ourselves to figuring out what is the best way to connect with all sorts of different teenagers, regardless of what backgrounds they're facing, to empower them with this skill.
So I assume that you do two things when you go into a school. One, you teach, but then you're also trying to get information to get research back to see whether or not this is working. So it's a double prong. You're not just going in to teach. I don't mean just, but it's not simply teaching. It's teaching and then understanding what's working and what's not working, and then coming up with statistics and ways of seeing how whether this works or not.
Yeah, and sometimes that feedback does come in the form of quantitative data that you can run statistical analyses on. And sometimes it's also just sitting down with the students and teachers who are offering the program and running focus groups and getting to hear directly from them what's working and what's not. I think that's sort of an invaluable part of this process, where we're constantly learning more about how to design this program in a way that really connects with teenagers.
And your PhDs are in what subject? Because I guess it's not in mindfulness. What is your PhDs and your academic studies? What were they?
So mine is in the psychological and brain sciences, and my dissertation actually was about mind wandering and mindfulness and using mindfulness to improve cognitive performance.
And my PhD was in social psychology, and my dissertation focused on empowering people with adaptive mindsets to effectively self-regulate.
Self-regulate, which is something that kids can't do.
Yeah, nor many adults.
Yeah.
It's a challenge for most of us.
So when you say digital, you're saying obviously it's on a computer as opposed to a book. So that's the first sort of, I guess, decision you made, that it's better to deal with kids today through electronic presentation than through paper presentation.
Yeah, it's on a computer or a tablet or a cell phone, and I think that there are advantages to that approach. The most obvious is that it actually makes it scalable, right? Because having well-trained mindfulness teachers to bring mindfulness to the millions of students around the country who could benefit from it, that's a logistically challenging and expensive thing to do. And so creating a digital resource allows you to really reach scale more effectively. But there are also advantages in ways that you can make it more effective, because you can standardize a very carefully refined program that can be taught by experts and really refined over years of work to discover an approach that works well.
So this is interactive, though. So, but who am I interacting with? Is it a program? Is it like, you know, online class where at some point there's somebody on the other side? How does this work?
Yeah, so students make an account, and then once they're in their dashboard, they have four different lessons. Lessons are 15 minutes long, spread out over a month, and each of those lessons entails direct-to-camera instruction. Mike and I are actually the instructors in the course, so they see us, they meet us, we're sharing that information with them. And then those videos are also imbued with lots of graphics and, you know, different animations to make them really interesting, sprinkled in with lots of comprehension checks and journaling opportunities and exercises and activities.
But how do you scale it if you can't be on the other side of the camera with 200,000, with 3 million kids? Can you scale this without having somebody actually behind on the other side of the camera?
Yeah, the training isn't offered live, so the videos are pre-recorded.
Okay.
But they're still, to some extent, personalized to the individual student, because we can record, you know, multiple versions of a particular video and then show somebody a video that corresponds to their particular interest or challenge.
You know, I was lucky enough to be shown at CSU Channel Islands a new initiative they have, where they took AI, and they're teaching nurses how to be more compassionate and empathetic with a program that looks like you're speaking to a MAME, but there actually is somebody in another room that they don't know about that sees them and is able to move the hands of the whatever the MAME, the cartoon, and actually speak to them. It's like you should be able to do that maybe face to face, but it actually works better this way. So there's all kinds of things happening that I don't know how scalable it is, but it's really cool stuff.
That's an interesting one. So it's not actually that there's like a robot that's independently interacting with the patient, but it's controlled by a clinician in another room.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. And they one of the things they found is that they can make the view, so if someone has macular degeneration that they're dealing with, they'll make the view the same as the patient's.
Oh, wow.
Or if someone has any type of disease, they will try to create a sense that can give them what the patient is feeling. So one of the things I learned, if you're a nurse and you put a tray down and you find they're only eating half of it because they only can see out of one eye, you have to turn the tray around so they get the other side of the food. Anyway, it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station. We'll be right back.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Celebrating 50 years of serving loyal regular guests and first-time visitors, the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli invites you to enjoy their huge selection of fresh-baked sweets, cookies, carrot cake, muffins, and the famous farm cake, granola, Oreo popcorn, wine cake, homemade soups, and the popular fresh juice bar. Or get a coffee drink or fresh-squeezed juice and peruse the famous wall of greeting cards at the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli. Open 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
What's that?
This
the newest online business banking around.
Can you initiate wires and approve transfers?
Yes.
Pay bills?
Check.
Cash management?
Of course.
All business, all online, all on your phone?
You bet. My computer, too. It's Montecito Bank and Trust's new business online banking. It works as hard as I do.
Huh. Montecito Bank and Trust.
You got it. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. Programs and workshops in classroom, online, with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, Improving Attitude, Creating Social Harmony, Bridging the Achievement Gap for Teens. And we're here today with Alyssa Mrazek and Michael Mrazek from the UCSB Center for Mindfulness and Human Potential. And we're talking about the Mindful Education Initiative that was funded by the U.S. Department of Education. And It's quite a goal, but you're trying to get 1 million new students to participate in this by the year 2025. Is that true?
Yeah, that's right. I think that is an ambitious goal, but it's a realistic one. We're trying to reach students through schools because we think that's a model that can really scale, and there are literally millions of students who could benefit from learning about these skills. So our goal is to create a program that's actually truly scalable and affordable so that it can be made available to students all around the country.
Have you done anything with, like, checking blood pressure and doing sort of physical things to see if there's a physical benefit as well as a mind?
We have in some of our research, and there's actually quite a lot of work investigating the effects of mindfulness on a whole variety of different sort of physiological outcomes. There's reasonably good evidence that it can reduce stress under stressful circumstances as measured by things like cortisol or your blood pressure.
It's funny because I went about 22, 23 years ago to a spa with my wife, and one of the things that we got as part of it was to go to a biofeedback specialist, and he did my thing, and then he said, "What are you doing?" I said, "Well, I'm about to retire." He said, "Oh, my God, you shouldn't retire. I just looked at your chart. You're not going to make it if you retire."
Oh, you're already too calm.
He said, you're all over the place. You need mm-hmm. to, well, he didn't have the vocabulary, but I think what he was saying is you need to get some mindfulness because you're all over it. And, without work as a structure, I guess work does structure you. And it keeps you at least during that period of time, if you're effective, keeping your mind on one thing. The more time you have free, I guess the less mind. Is that true? I'm just making this up as I'm going along.
Well, you can be mindful about anything. Mm. And so you could mindfully cook. You could mindfully drive. You could be mindful while having a conversation with someone. You could also be mindful while you work or while you lay on the beach. And so I don't think it's necessarily something that you can only do during your working career.
In fact, I suspect that there's a lot of people who are actually least mindful while at work if they don't like their jobs, right? Because for a lot of people, work is something you have to do, not something you want to do. And so your mind is prone to drift away and think about something else.
A lot of people use as a coping mechanism denial. I guess in a way, denial is sort of a lack of mindfulness, because if you're not going to focus on what the issue is, you're not being mindful. Is that a fair conclusion?
One element of mindfulness that's often emphasized is what's called willingness. Mm. And it's the willingness to actually be aware of and to allow your experiences to unfold. And some people say that's actually the essence of mindfulness. I don't think that's necessarily the case, but I do think it's one important element. And so to the degree that it's useful to have a willingness to really get in touch with your own experience, it does seem like it might be a little bit at odds with denial.
Yeah, that means I'm out, because my whole modus operandi is denial. Sorry.
Well, like I said, it's only one piece of it, so there's probably plenty of other things you could use.
So There are a group of a lot of organizations in town that deal with teens, AHA being one of them, but there's the Boys and Girls Club. Have you gone to any of these groups to either to do research or to help them? Because they are the groups that really are basically trying to do the same thing.
We haven't yet, but we're very open to it and think that could be a great place for collaboration. So far in our 9 months, we've just been focused on partnering with schools, but there's because it's a digital course, it's actually quite flexible to integrate into other contexts. So it's something we're open to.
One of the things that's so interesting to me, because I've done some teaching at the AHA after school program, where these kids come into the after school program after at 3:30, after a whole day of school, and the first thing they do is they lie on the ground, they lie on the floor, and they do a directed meditation. And then they are energized and are able to do whatever it is that the program for the, that they have for that day. And these are kids that, you know, are not without issues. And it's just amazing. It really works. And, you know, they know what to do. They go right in and they actually relax. And so, mm-hmm. Anyway, I think that would be an interesting initiative to consider. One of the things about new ideas with schools is dealing with principals, dealing with school superintendents. People don't like new things. They have to learn new things. Do you have any pushback, or do you have a problem getting into the schools and getting them to agree that this is something they have limited time, limited budget? How do you get them to agree?
So far, actually, the schools we've been partnering with have been mostly coming to us because they heard about our work somewhere and they realized that there could be some potential benefit there. But over the last 2 months, actually thanks to a National Science Foundation grant, Mike and I have been traveling around the country and visiting different schools, talking to superintendents, high school principals, counselors, teachers, and we've been really talking about some of those exact challenges and trying to figure out what issues at their particular school are major impediments to student learning. And so we've gotten to actually talk face-to-face with a lot of these folks, and we've learned so much through the process. And we did actually over 100 of these interviews, and a clear pattern emerged, and that was that students are struggling with distraction, stress, and an unhealthy relationship with technology big time.
Well, you have an advantage. You come in without the need to ask for money. One of the problems with dealing with the high schools today is they're so short of money. If someone were to come in with a program like this and say, well, you need to pay us once your grant is over, then you are competing with every other kind of program. So in a way, any of these initiatives need to be really home runs to convince the schools to pay for it, because the federal government at some point is going to say, you got to do it on your own. Is that shaking your head doesn't help on the radio.
Yeah. Well, so I think that we are in this fortunate position where during this 3-year grant, we have the support to be able to make this training freely available to schools. And our mission is to make this training available to kids wherever they are, regardless of their location and resources. And so we want to make sure that schools can continue to receive it in the future. I think right now we're sort of agnostic about what exactly that's going to look like in the long term, because you know some continuing support will be necessary to continue to make the resource available. But our goal is to make sure that schools can continue to access it.
And you'd like to make it so that you can actually deliver it digitally, so that there really isn't need for money. There wouldn't be really a need for money. Is that part of the plan?
I think delivering it digitally definitely reduces the need for money, but it doesn't actually eliminate it. And I think that that's one misconception about digital training programs, is that you just like create it, set it, and then walk away and you never have to worry about it again. But creating a really powerful resource isn't free. You know, it actually takes a lot of time and energy and work to do it. And so I don't think that this resource will ever be completely done. No more work is needed, but I do think it's the type of thing that could eventually scale in a very affordable way.
I would imagine a good marketing approach would be to teach the teachers first, to convince them that it's really helpful. So to give the superintendents and the principals and the teachers the course, let them understand how much better they feel, and then they'll much likely be ambassadors.
Yeah, so in the pilot that we've done this last spring in two schools in Illinois, oftentimes the teachers would do the course too. They had their own accounts. They could go through all the materials. The principals did it. The whole counseling office did it. I think that is a good approach. But it's also, you know, a likely scenario where there's a teacher who wants to be able to offer it to their students but doesn't actually have time to do it themselves and feels like they're getting asked to do this and that, and it would just be one more burden on their plate. And so I think having a model where they could also offer it to their students without having to do it themselves might be worthwhile.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafond's Montecito Wine Bistro, where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafond and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers, in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
The Central Coast may seem laid back, but when it's time to work, no one works harder, including the bank that's grown up here. Montecito Bank and Trust offers customized lending and banking for all businesses, big and small. It's harder than offering one-size-fits-all solutions, but it's the right thing to do. And here, getting things right is a way of life. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. CSU Channel Islands is affordable and financial aid is available with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, helping teens achieve goals, surmount challenges, stop bullying, and communicate and listen effectively. I'm Neil Kreisel, and I'm here today with Alyssa Mrazak and Michael Mrazak. Alyssa is a postdoctoral research fellow, and Michael is the director of research at the UCSB Center for Mindfulness and Human Potential. That's a department that has, I guess you said, 50 different people working there? Because of all the things you're doing, you must have 50 or 60 people. How many people in your department?
I think at least that many. There's probably more.
No, yeah. Seriously.
I don't know the exact number in our department, in our center.
Yeah.
Oh, is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Okay, in our center, yeah, there's probably, I don't know, 15 people who are contributing in various ways.
And everybody travels too, and is everyone doing the same thing you're doing, or you have to do it all yourself when you go to these schools?
Everybody does different things, and so the school visits have primarily been Alyssa and I to go and sort of, you know, talk with the teachers and the students who are doing it.
And how long is the grant for?
The grant is 3 years, and we're 9 months into it right now.
Oh, great. So you have plenty of time. And the idea would be to prepare a report that would incentivize them to continue.
The way that the U.S. Department of Education works is that, yes, if we're sort of successful in this phase of the grant, then there are other grant opportunities to help you sort of scale up the intervention that you've created.
So is there anything particularly different in your program versus other mindfulness programs that help differentiate you and get the grant?
Yeah, I think that there's a number of things. I think in getting the grant, part of it was sort of our track record, having taught mindfulness and having sort of an evidence base for our ability to teach mindfulness in a way that really brings meaningful outcomes. But it was also about sort of pitching a new way of approaching digital mindfulness education. And there are a number of mindfulness apps that are out there right now that are pretty good, especially if you're an adult. But when it comes to trying to deliver digital mindfulness training to teenagers in schools, there's actually sort of a gap that we're trying to address. And there's a few sort of features of our approach that I think are really important. The most important is probably just designing something that's really specifically for teenagers, because they're a very different audience than adults. You know, their interests and priorities and the examples and stories that resonate with them is just different than adults. And so understanding that audience and designing something for them is really important.
And where's the expertise to do the actual web design? Is that, you must have people that can really do this. This is a real specialized area to write the programs and do the...
Yeah, we have two software engineers. Actually, they're living in Minneapolis. They are incredibly talented, Pete Carr and Alex Delagarde, and they are the ones who built this digital learning platform from scratch.
If they continue to do a good job, will you move them to Santa Barbara? Because it's cold in Minneapolis.
That's
and it
the
gets
dream.
Hot in the summer, and they have mosquitoes there.
They've hinted at that, too.
Okay, because that's their incentive, right? Just eventually, they'll get to come
They
here.
Say they work better on the beach, so... Yeah.
You have already won some awards. You won a National Science Foundation Award. Tell us about that.
That was actually the award that Alyssa mentioned that gave us the opportunity to travel around the country to do 100-plus interviews with different stakeholders in the field of education, including superintendents, principals, teachers. And so it was a way to really go out and talk with the people who would be using our course to make sure that we design something that really addresses their challenges in a way that really works for them.
Is the National Science Foundation threatened funding-wise, too, like some of the others, like the NEA? I mean, is this part of the cutbacks, or are they okay?
I can't really speak to that. I think the last I heard, they actually fared quite well in terms of their funding for the next year, but it's a constantly evolving process.
So we talked about mindfulness, and now I have a new word. I'm going to try and pronounce it, plasticity. The Plasticity Initiative. Give me a P. What is plasticity?
So, plasticity is sort of scientific jargon for the capacity to change. And so there's been a lot of scientific interest about, you know, how much can people improve different aspects of their life? Can they improve their intelligence? Can they improve or change their personality? And so the Plasticity Initiative at our center is really trying to address the question of how much can somebody reasonably expect to be able to improve their life under kind of ideal circumstances. And so over a series of studies across many years, we've been trying to address that question by putting people through like essentially a boot camp of personal development and then doing rigorous assessments to see how much can somebody's life improve over the course of 6 weeks.
That sounds really fascinating, particularly, you know, as a baby boomer. So many people I know retire and then have no clue what they're going to do. And it probably shortens their life as well. And they don't think they can learn anything. And you know, golf can only take you so far. So I would imagine this would be a terrific area to the people who are facing retirement. And, you know, how can they change their life from, you know, doing something that people tell them to do and then finding out what their real passion is?
Yeah, we hear that quite often, that particular demographic might be one that would love this personal development boot camp that Mike just described. So far, we've only done it with college students, but it doesn't mean it wouldn't be a great program for older adults. And I think one of the core pieces of a boot camp like this that's critical is to have a mindset of believing that you can continue to change and develop. If you think that, you know, hey, a dog can't learn new tricks, and here I am at age 65, and, you know, my life is what it is, then it's going to be much harder to actually see gains in your life. Having that core mindset that you're the type of person that can grow and change with effort is really important.
I learned this lesson recently. I'm probably the only one in America that listens to doo-wop, which is the 1950s rock and roll, and my kids think that I'm nuts. It's like not even music to them. And I said, well, that's my music, and, you know, I don't like anything else. And then I discovered a new kind of music called postmodern jukebox, which is this online guy that developed a way of changing the arrangements of popular songs into the 30s, 40s, and 50s, and I love it. And
Can you sing a little bit for us?
I have enough trouble talking. But by the way, it's fantastic. It's Postmodern Jukebox. Look at it on the web. They've had 10 billion views or whatever. But the point is that I'm really shocked that I actually like this kind of music now. And so I know it's a small step, small step, but, you know, maybe I have some plasticity left in me. What is gene expression? Does that mean, I have the phrase here, gene expression, does that mean that your genes, you're a prisoner of your genes?
Yeah, so just by way of context, when we do these sort of boot camp studies, we do assessments before and afterwards to see what changes. And one of the things that we looked at in a recent study was gene expression in immune cells. So every human has about 20,000 genes, and those genes express, meaning they turn on and turn off, even on a daily basis. And one thing that we've learned throughout the last decade is that our lifestyle choices and our actions actually influence which genes express and turn on. And when they do, they create a protein which has some effect in our body or our mind. And what we found in our research was that the 6 weeks of training actually led to a change in the gene expression of immune cells, where people were actually increasing the expression of genes that help them fight off viruses. So it was sort of increasing their immune function.
So we're talking not only mental health improvement, we're talking physical improvement. So this is the answer to life. So you should listen to the show because we give you the meaning of life. Usually it's hard to find, but this is, isn't that important? This sounds exciting. And, you know, there's so much written today about all kinds of things. I don't see much about this. Is this something that is you're hiding from the public, or this is just a slow progression of initiatives that's going to take some time?
Yeah, so this plasticity initiative actually probably started about 4 or 5 years ago.
So it's new. Yeah,
very new. Yeah. Well, we published already probably, I think, 3 or 4 papers from it, but the data that we collected was pretty astounding. And part of what really surprised me about it was that over the course of 6 weeks, you can see really dramatic improvements across literally dozens of important aspects of people's lives, ranging from their physical health to their mental well-being to their resilience to stress, just lots of really crucially important domains. And we collected so much compelling data that we haven't had time to write it all up yet. So we'll be sharing more sort of in the coming years as we have a chance to publish those papers.
So the phrase, "I'm too old to change," is going to be eliminated from our vocabulary.
Well, again, like Alyssa said, these studies were done with college-age students, but I think that one of the things that I've taken away from it is that the capacity for an individual to change is actually much greater than scientists have recognized, and I think greater than what the general public seems to think as well. And so this could be a stepping stone to helping people sort of adopt that growth mindset.
I agree. I think that people very often underestimate their potential. And so we were having groups of 20 students at a time come in and do this wellness boot camp. And, you know, they came in not thinking they could change. And then by just after 6 weeks, the testimonials that we gathered were phenomenal. Like people felt it in their lives.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education, and we'll be right back with our final segment.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
In 1962, Pierre Lafond founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
What's that?
This? The newest online business banking around.
Can you initiate wires and approve transfers?
Yes.
Pay bills?
Check.
Cash management?
Of course.
All business, all online, all on your phone?
You bet. My computer, too. It's Montecito Bank and Trust's new business online banking. It works as hard as I do.
Huh. Montecito Bank and Trust.
You got it. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. Programs and workshops in classroom, online, with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens manage their emotions, support their peers, and serve their community. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Alisa Mrazak and Michael Mrazak from the UCSB Center for Mindfulness and Human Potential. And I can't wait to go home and tell my wife that I can actually change now. So if I'm joking, but I'm not joking. If I was interested in improving myself, besides my usual therapy appointment each week, what is there any access to your program that someone like me could take advantage of?
So currently, our program is only available to high school students.
I look young, don't I?
You might pass. But we did actually write a book called Presence of Mind, which is sort of a distillation of our approach to learning about mindfulness. And so that's a resource that we often make available to teachers when we go into a new school so they can get introduced to sort of a practical introduction to mindfulness and meditation.
And how do you get this book?
You can get it on Amazon.
And the book is written by the two of you. And the book is called Presence of Mind, A Practical Introduction to Mindfulness and Meditation. So that's a good place to start.
Yeah. Mike's wife is actually also a co-author on that, Kata Mrazek. So it's the Mrazek trifecta. Wrote that book.
So she has the same last name, too.
Mm-hmm.
And if your daughter participated, you could have four Mrazeks on the cover.
I'm sure that's coming, yeah. Maybe like edition three.
But, you know, seriously, it is, you know, for this community and for, you know, I think it would really be a great asset for people to go in some of the assisted living, but senior living places. And I know you need me to give you some advice about how to do research, but it would be interesting to see if you could actually change people at that age.
Yeah, we would love to do it. Right now, we're so focused on trying to make this course for high school students. I think it's going to have to wait a couple of years, but hopefully we can get back to it at some point.
So what's your long-term goal? What would you like to do when you grow up?
Well, in the short term this summer, we're just trying to make the course as good as it can be over the next 2.5 years, really deliver this course to as many students as we can and keep amping that up. But our parents definitely instilled like a really strong sense of social responsibility in us. And I'm pretty open to the trajectory of where life might take us. But I just feel like we're so lucky with everything that we've been given. The resources that we have, the education that we have, the support group that we have, the citizenship that we have. We're lucky on so many levels. And so I don't have a step-by-step plan for the long-term goal, but I definitely hope it has something to do with social impact.
And Mike?
I think my aspiration is to take the project that we're working on right now and to ensure that this becomes a sustaining resource for teenagers around the entire world. And that's a big aspiration, but I think a realistic one. And so that's my personal goal.
So when you look at kids who say, my goal is to change the world, you guys are actually doing it.
We're contributing, yeah.
Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for all you do. I've been waiting for years to change, and I'm going to read your book, and maybe I will be a more interesting person. I'm looking forward to that. My wife is looking forward to that.
Low expectations.
You've been listening to AHA Presents About Education. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.